When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail.
One,
had to
two,
fall, just
one, two, three, four.
This is the final word, Australia West Indies Daily, Brisbane, day zero, that is to say the day before the test match. The preview, Jeff Lemon and Bharat Sundaresan with you. The show brought to you by Cbus Super, cbussuper.com.au, if you want to sort out your retirement needs. And Bharat, here we are. We've got another test match to go. We had a very short one in Adelaide, 2 days and a bit. We've got a lot of rain around that at least promises that it might make this one go on a bit longer. But we'll come to all the match stuff in the second part of the show, I think, because so basically you and I recorded the weekly show on Monday morning, and then by Monday night there were about 10 different news lines.
What an evening that was.
of quite some significance. We had covered off the fact that Usman Khawaja has been past fit and has passed his concussion test and he's okay to play. And then we had... It was Monday night. It was after we'd done the weekly show when Travis Head's COVID test came through.
Yes.
And now we've got more COVID results coming up in the camp, but also it doesn't make that much difference anymore because they're allowed to play anyway. Catch us up on that.
So it started with Travis Head. I mean, COVID was back into the limelight thanks to Travis Head. I mean, no fault of his. Who knows where he got his COVID? Who knows where anyone gets their COVID these days? And he tested positive, I think, just so Monday would have been 2-3 days after the test match finished officially. They said at that point that he will not miss out, even if he does test positive. Mm-hmm. But as it turned out, this morning he tested negative. And the first news was that he will train today and he will play. But two other people in the camp have tested positive for COVID. Cameron Green being one of them, who I did see bat and bowl yesterday. Andrew McDonald also has tested positive. He wasn't at training yesterday. And we just were told that he's feeling a little unwell. So not 100%. So it stayed back in the hotel. So, so you have the head coach with COVID. And I guess you're one of your all-rounders with COVID. What will happen with Cameron Green is there's a room right above the dressing room, which kind of during peak COVID became an isolation room in case someone had tested positive at that point. So that's where Cameron Green will be left when he isn't playing or when he's not out on the field or batting. So he'll sit by himself. You'll remember Matt Renshaw during the Sydney test last year was left in the dugout with a little iPad where it looked like he was playing games. So I don't know what he was doing. Clearly could not have been browsing. That would have been against the ACSU rules and laws. But that's the COVID news. Yes, it's pretty much the same playing 11 for Australia, except that Travis Head has now tested negative and he'll be free to do whatever he wants, whereas Cameron Green will have to follow the protocols. I did check if he could still stand and gully because, you know, Cameron Green, when you talk of him as an all-rounder, it's not just with bat and ball, but also what he brings to gully. But I think it should be fine. Though I do wonder what happens if... I put this out on Twitter as well. What if he dives to his left while a right-hander is batting to take a catch? Does third slip kind of jump the other way to avoid coming within that range or that radius that is allowed for a player to get close to someone who has tested positive for COVID? I don't know. We will see. But basically, he'll just have a lot of alone time.
The other part of it is that it's not just about infectiousness or contagion. It's about the fact that COVID can... Like some people don't have much in the way of symptoms. Some people get knocked around really badly. And potentially it's something that might, you know, he might be feeling okay tomorrow and then be getting worse through the test match and be impaired as a player. I mean, that does seem like something that they're not taking into consideration by just saying that he'll go ahead and play anyways if he does deteriorate. And if he does deteriorate, then at that point you can't, as far as I know, you can't activate a COVID substitution
if
somebody's already got it before they've come into the match, right? It's only if they... The COVID substitution rule was about players who test positive during a match and the fact that they could be substituted.
No, I think the COVID substitute rule itself is gone. So I don't think they have COVID substitutes anymore. So, which is why the player is allowed to play. I mean, the moment... UN or whoever is in charge of these things, the WHO said it's no longer a pandemic. I think they did away with the COVID substitute. So, so I think if he feels sick, he just feels sick, I guess. I don't think you can bring in anyone for Cameron Green.
Yeah. Okay. The Glenn Maxwell story also came out on Monday night after the announcement had already been made that he was being rested, being managed out of the one-day squad. The news that's come out since then does suggest that that was actually, that decision was made ahead of time, and that basically what happened is Friday's a hot day and he's gone out on the golf course and stood in the sun all day and got dehydrated and been drinking alcohol and not enough water. And I've done it. I suppose you've done it. It's the kind of thing that does happen to people, but it's also the kind of thing that you would prefer your professional athletes to be able to avoid getting in situations like that. So the somewhat subtle but certainly between the lines, the messaging was pretty clear from Andrew McDonald and Pat Cummins that they want him to make better decisions and not get himself into that kind of situation in the first place.
And literally 15 minutes ago, George Bailey did his press conference. Australia have just announced their T20I squad for the West Indies series, and Glenn Maxwell is in that squad. And he said something along the similar lines. He said, Glenn Maxwell had that night back, he would make better decisions. He wouldn't do what he did, or he wouldn't end up in the situation that he did. And I think that's it. I mean, it can happen to anyone, but when you are Glenn Maxwell and you're a cricketer of that pedigree, or any pedigree for that matter, and you have you're an elite athlete and a public figure, I guess, I think more than anything is the bit where he passes out and has to be taken to hospital in an ambulance. I think that's how maybe the story broke as well, because it came down to that. I mean, if, say, just... passes out or he then is okay wherever he was, I guess it doesn't even make news, but the fact that he ended up in hospital is what makes it slightly more of a news story than what it would have been otherwise. And you're right, I mean, that's what they have all said. Pat Cummins said as well, look, he wasn't part of the squad, he was there on an independent capacity. He was there for a golf event and he maybe just heard that there's a concert there and goes and meets everyone leads to this. So, yeah, I think what Maxwell's manager has also said, that Glenn Maxwell is embarrassed by what has happened, as you would be, I guess. But we'll find out. I mean, look, that T20I series is, a couple of weeks away? Maybe just over 2 weeks away, and he'll be there. I'm sure he'll be mic'd up by the TV broadcasters and that'll be the more challenging task, right? Whoever you are, to then come and talk about it publicly, about something kind of embarrassing, will be a challenge. But hey, he put himself in that situation, and he'll just have to face it.
Yeah, I suppose if you're in a room like at that concert where half of the people attending work in cricket media, then that's not the place to be if you don't want a story to get out. And Pat Cummins was the other interesting part of, I'm sure we'll talk about this on the weekly show next week as well, but it was inevitable that he would be asked about Australia Day. He would have known that. He had a decision to make about whether he would actually give a substantial answer or whether he would pat it away. He could have done that. He could have just said, Cricket Australia make these decisions and it's out of our hands and, it's not for us to worry about and dodge the issue. But he was clear that that he supports moving the date of Australia Day, and he makes an important point, which obviously gets lost when all of the usual dickheads jump up and down about it, which is that and I think it's a point that a lot of us agree with, that having a day of national celebration is a great thing and we should be able to do that, and we should be able to do it on a day that includes everybody, and by its very nature January 26 does not include everybody. That's pretty basic stuff. That's not taking any particularly radical political line. It's offering consideration to your fellow Australians, and that is the way that you arrive at a point of national unity. But you were at the press conference yesterday. It seemed that he was very specific, and he'd obviously thought about what he was going to say beforehand, and said it in that way that he does, which is considered, and which is nuanced, and which I don't know. It wasn't strident. It seemed like a sensible, measured position.
Oh, very much so. And he did admit that he's been thinking about it for a while, like he has with everything else. And I think one thing we have learned about Pat Cummins in the last few years, and especially since he became captain and he got more of a voice, is that he does consider a lot of things. And he's never really, in any press conference that I've attended of his, shied away from talking about anything. I remember when he was asked about the Yorkshire racism report before the Lord's Test, he answered that. Even when he was asked a pretty random and pretty stupid question about what was happening in Gaza during the 50-over World Cup in Bangalore, even though he could have easily just rubbished that question, he did not. I mean, he still kind of addressed the sense behind the question rather than the question itself. And similarly, like you said, when he was asked about Australia Day, he didn't shy away. And it was a very considered response. And I guess it just makes so much sense, right? When he says, well, yeah, I mean, he mentioned it at least 2-3 times, and I asked him about it on radio as well, where he said, look, I'm very proud to be an Australian, and this is like, you know, the most beautiful country in the world. We are all privileged and lucky to be here. Why can't we just pick a day where we all agree that, you know, it's a day to celebrate? We should celebrate Australia, but just pick another day. And I think as much as, you know, as impressed as most people would be with Pat Cummins, unless you are one of those dickheads who you mentioned, Steve Smith, who generally stays pretty apolitical about a lot of things, he was asked the same question today, and he spoke about how he's had a chat about it with Scott Boland, who obviously it comes from a First Nations background, and he said the same thing that Pat Cummins said, like, yeah, we should have a day to celebrate Australia, but maybe we should pick a day that all Australians can celebrate, because clearly January 26th means if anything but a day to celebrate for a lot of people in this country. So I think it's good to see big voices, strong voices like Pat Cummins and Steve Smith as former captain, vice captain, and a leader within Australian cricket come out and kind of not just speak their mind, but make sense with what they're saying. And like you say, be measured and very considerate with the way they go about it.
All right, let's get onto the teams and the match itself.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The second test between West Indies and Australia at the Gabba. There are a few interesting things floating around here, Bharat. One of them, so the Australian team will likely be unchanged unless somebody falls down the stairs between now and tomorrow. The West Indies team, will come to that in a minute. Might be some changes there. You've got a pink ball test. You've got the Brisbane pitch, and people tend to think with both of those things, you know, carnage, bowlers, game, ball swinging, doing all sorts, difficult to bat and so on. And yet it can also be the exact opposite. A lot of times in the pink ball tests that we've seen in Australia, the pink ball gets pretty flat pretty quickly. It stops doing much pretty early. You maybe have that difficult session under lights coming into the third session, particularly that sort of twilight hour or so, which will be... So the game will start earlier than it would otherwise in Brisbane because of time zones, so there won't be actually that much of the game in actual darkness. But and you've also got the fact that the Gabba pitch, yes, we had a two-day test against South Africa, but at other times it's been an absolute road and players have made huge scores and it's been very easy to bat. And we saw Pakistan make 450 in the fourth innings against a pink ball in that the only other pink ball test in Brisbane. So it's sort of interesting to think which way it can go at this point, whether it's going to be one of those bowlers games or whether it's going to be one of those ones where it's really hard work to actually take wickets, and then throw in with that the likelihood of rain, particularly very heavy rain forecast on Saturday, that could slow things up and push the game further out as well.
Oh, pink ball lottery. It's a term I borrow from Steve Smith. He must have mentioned it a few times yesterday in the Nets. And I, after his Nets session, I did have a chat with him on the side about pink ball lottery. And you're right, the pink ball, it does do some strange things. It often has nothing to do with the pitch. And he spoke about how he often finds it difficult to pick it up during the day in sunlight. And actually, I will correct you that we will have one entire session in pitch darkness or off night cricket because of the time of the year, because we are towards the end of January now. I saw the sun set by around 6:40-ish yesterday, or in fact earlier by 6:20-ish, and by 6:45 it was pretty dark. So considering the last session will start at 7 p.m., and let's add in the extra half hour, so 7 to 9:30 will be properly dark, and what we won't get is that tricky twilight period here, though. The twilight just kind of, unlike in Adelaide where you it's very quick, unlike in Adelaide where the twilight lasts for quite a while and you barely get like what 20 or 25 minutes of night cricket, if you want to call it that. I think that'll be different here, but which also means that a lot of batters I've spoken to, not just Steve Smith, actually prefer facing the pink ball.
Are they starting it? Does that mean they're starting it at later? Are they starting it at 2:30 p.m. local time?
No, they're starting at 2. So so you'd say 2 to 4 and then the long break.
Last time it started earlier, it was, I think they started at 1 o'clock last time because they wanted to line it up with the Sydney and Melbourne time zones because Queensland doesn't have daylight savings, so they're an hour earlier. So I think it was 1 p.m. local, which meant we didn't get much evening plays. Right. Maybe they've brought it forward a bit this time around.
Yeah. I guess so. And I'm guessing it has to do with the time of the year. I'm not sure. Right? Yeah. So, but again, what the ball will do, nobody seems to be sure. Pat Cummins has not played with the pink ball for more than 2 years now. He missed the last two Adelaide tests. So, hashtag Nisa must play was reigning supreme for a couple of summers during the pink ball test. And of course, if you look at the opposition, Kemal Roach hasn't bowled with the pink ball. He was asked about this probably since that 2017 tour of England. So, you know, the West Indies don't play a lot of pink ball test cricket. So
he didn't play in the UAE-Pakistan pink ball test?
Apparently, he did not. So I think you had Shannon Gabriel. Maybe he was injured. I don't remember Bishu playing that game, but as a spinner. But I think the pitch is going to be interesting, though. We had that very spicy pitch last year where the test finished within 2 days. From where I've been sat, it does have a much... I mean, it's not as green as it was last year, but it's still green. I mean, it was very green yesterday. But even today, it looks pretty... I think Dave Sandusky has left a lot of grass on the surface. So I still think the bowlers will have a say, on this pitch. And I guess the weather condition as well. If it does stay cloudy as it's expected. Yesterday was cloudy. Today has been warm and muggy. But the weather forecast keeps improving in terms of when the cyclone will hit. It seems to be pushed back further and further away. But I do think the ball will have a big role. The bowlers will have a big say on this game. Not just after light. If anything, before the lights come on as well. Yeah, so it's going to be a challenge for the batters from both teams. That's how I look at it anyway.
And West Indies team selection, we're recording this before Craig Brathwaite's press conference because he's timing it quite late to match up with the evening training session. But you have been creeping around West Indies training the last couple of days, watching everybody, listening to everybody, looking at the body language, working everything out. So I'm sure you I'm sure you know the 11 already, even though he hasn't released it publicly. What are your observations?
Now, of course, I've been doing all of that. And also, as you would recall, I've been speculating about the team changes since the end of the Adelaide test.
For about 6 days now, yeah. Every time since the start of the Adelaide test.
Pretty much. And every time we were in a car together, I would have this conversation with myself, even though like you were sitting right next to me, about what would happen in Brisbane. And just looking at what happened yesterday, they do have a training session to go under lights. And I don't think it's an optional one. A lot of them will be there. Most of them would be here. I think Kevin Sinclair, the off-spinning all-rounder, will play ahead of Gudakesh Moti for a couple of reasons.
Good.
Moti did not bat yesterday. Sinclair batted. And even before Moti even had a bowl, I saw Sean Tate, the bowling coach, having a one-on-one session with Kevin Sinclair. And then Sinclair was very impressive. I mean, he gets the ball to dip. I saw a bit of him at the Karen Rorton Oval as well. He was impressive in the nets yesterday with the pink ball. But what he does bring is batting. Hmm. And if the fast bowlers, and they have four now, I mean, three fast bowlers, and Justin Graves was pretty impressive on debut.
Yeah, he was good. So
if you're just going to use a handful of overs of spin here and there, why not bring someone in who can also relatively add some batting prowess? And someone with the confidence of having played a lot more international cricket than Moti. Moti's coming off that really good series against England in the T20 Ashes, but Kevin Sinclair's been around for a while. So that's my gut feel that he comes in. I can't think of any real changes to the batting lineup, really, or any other moves, because I think the fast bowlers will be Roach, the two Josephs, and Justin Graves, unless they really take a big punt and say, okay, we're going to play five fast bowlers and play Akeem Jordan as well, which I would be very surprised by, even though Jordan was all fired up in the nets yesterday. So I think that's the only move I can, or selection change I can foresee. But we'll find out. I mean, in a couple of hours anyway, Craig Brathwaite will speak to the press.
Yeah, if Jordan as a swing bowler could have an argument in a pink ball game, but teams can overthink it too, expecting there to be more swing than there actually ends up being. Okay, well, we will know more, and perhaps this show will be published by then. Who knows? We'll find out. I think that's it for us for the Final Word Daily, Australia West Indies. There'll also be a Final Word Daily for India and England coming up later today. The preview for the first test over there with Adam Collins and Cameron Ponsonby. So keep your ears out for that if you're interested in the other test series, the test match that we'll be running alongside this one. Bharat Sundaresan, thanks for joining us. I'm Jeff Lemon, cbussuper.com.au. presenting the show to you. And if you like what we're doing, patreon.com/thefinalword is where you can get more involved. We'll see you for day one. George Benson, I ain't protected, brother, I ain't fenced in. My future question, my current senses, that'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty, wrote this so you know what I meant here. I had to go about it right.